I'd like to thank everybody who helped open the meeting. Our speaker tonight, I met almost eight years ago. Okay, someplace in there. And I stumbled into this meeting. I stumbled into this meeting. I was out looking for online meetings because I had been to some phone meetings, and I had found the Higna website, what it was 7 years ago, 8 years ago, and came to the meeting because there was only one meeting at that point. And I met this individual, and we become fast friends. And we found out very shortly after I started coming to this meeting, because he had been to Florida, and he had met my roommate, because she heard his voice, because I was on an open mic at the time. I hadn't gone to all the earpieces and everything else at that moment. And she said, "Is that so-and-so?" And I said, "Yeah." And she says, "I met him at the service symposium." So it shows how small a world the world really is, and how small the microcosm of fellowship is, because it really is. You can't go anyplace and not be known for all those that are new. Sooner or later, somebody remembers you, and probably pretty quickly. So without further ado, Steve, because we wouldn't have these meetings if it wasn't for you and a couple other people, would you share with us? You just celebrated an anniversary. I think it was a week ago today. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, thank you, Jay.
Thank you, Jay. Yeah, I'm an addict, and my name is Steve. And
hi, Steve.
Steve.
Hi.
Hi, Steve.
Hi. My clean. Nice. Hello, guys. It's a real privilege to be here tonight doing this. My clean date is 19/10/1992, which was actually last Monday. This Monday just gone. And I'm always and forever going to be grateful for that date. And I'm sat here tonight, actually, I have no clue what I'm going to share. I've been trying to think about it today, it's just nothing's come to me at all. So I'm just going to sit here and share a bit of my experience, strength and hope, kind of what brought me here, what encouraged me to stay, and what's kept me coming back. And kind of one of the things I did, and I don't do this very often, I still have the folder that I had when I first got clean from the place that I was in, that opened the door for me to find Narcotics Anonymous. It was a treatment center. And I'd been in there a week in the hospital, and they were trying to get me well enough to kind of stand and function as a human being. The last day I took a drug was the 18th, which was the day before that Sunday, and they said to me, "Look, we need to stop this, and you're going to have to get on with it and deal with whatever it is that you've got to deal with, and the reason that you're here." And that was on the 19/10/1992. And I'm actually sat here, I'm looking at my discharge date from that place, which is the 1/12/1992, so it was, 6 weeks or something. And I'm reading through it, and it says, recommendations, abstain totally from all mold altering chemicals one day at a time, attend regular meetings, study the NA basic text, follow the expectations of the staff and the group. And it goes on to talk about stuff, and it talks about, there's a list of things that they suggested I should work on 28 years ago, and that was arrogance and grandiosity, anger, resentment, and controlling and perfectionism. I can look back at that and and think about where I was when I got here, and it was all about, it's a great little sentence here. It's all right for you to be all right. It's all right not to be right. And I think I was so caught up in my addiction. I didn't understand. I actually didn't. I'd lost all sight of what was actually right and wrong. I no longer had a concept of that. I just did on a kind of real animal level what it was I needed to do the things I felt I needed to do to get through my days, which was to absolutely and compulsively find ways and means to get more drugs. And, you know, for those in the room that might not know me, a lot of people in this room have probably heard my story before, but for those that don't know me that are in this room, I mean, I use drugs for over a quarter of a century. I picked up quite early, like a lot of us, kind of progressed through the things that we know of as drugs from one to the other, and it got kind of progressively more intense. The kinds of drugs I got involved with were kind of progressively and quite quickly for me, more powerful. And I went from having a few drinks to smoking a bit of pot to being given my first class A drugs, and then, you know, in a very short period of time, less than 2 years really, I was injecting opiates of any form that I could get hold of. A lot of them were kind of what were known as kind of, they were kind of prescription drugs as such, a lot of them, because I was involved in that kind of scene. People that were going into chemists and taking. Right from the very beginning, I became a bit of a purist, really, because of that, I think. And I was always, you know, if it wasn't good, I didn't want it, you know, and it was, but nevertheless, you know, very quickly I progressed into whatever it was, whatever was available. And I used all the drugs on the bloody, all the drugs on the list over those years. And it fucking destroyed me in the end, you know, the various things that I took, you know. I don't know if I had a drug of choice, probably, but it's irrelevant. You know, my drug of choice was more. And by the time I got here, I had lost everything. I was the description of the still suffering addict in the basic text. I was desperate, isolated, lonely, broken spiritually, mentally, and physically. I'd lost everything that I cared about. I'd lost everybody that cared about me because they'd fucking given up, basically. They kind of got to a point where they wouldn't, no one would engage with me. You know, broken marriages, kids in care, all of those things, you know, that we go through, jails, institutions. I know I died once or twice and came back to life, always, you know. All of those things that we go through, you know. So the story of my using was kind of pretty typical, you know, in a lot of ways. It went on for a long time, and that's a fucking miracle in itself. How I managed to survive all those years of doing that is actually, yeah, it's still a fucking mystery to me in some ways, you know. But I believe there was a power in my life that was preparing me for something else, and was there looking after me. I believe that unequivocally today. You know, and reading through this stuff in this book, in this pamphlet, takes me right back. It takes me right back to remembering that moment. You know, that last old sponsor of mine once suggested that I should, you know, you should never forget the last day of your using and how that felt. And I never have. I'm in touch with the desperate feelings. I'm in touch with that feelings of utter fucking being lost. I was lost to the world. I was lost to myself. Quite how I ended up at this place is also a fucking mystery. I was in psychosis a lot of the time in the last few months of my using, so I didn't really have much clue what was really going on. But there were some people. There were some people that started that kind of I found myself in front of that. You know, I guess saw something inside of me that I couldn't see myself, and those individuals guided me to a place where I was maybe willing to, for the first time in my life, in my using life, certainly, to ask for some kind of help, or to surrender at least, because I didn't even know what I was surrendering to or what I was asking for help for. I was that confused. You know, I knew I was probably quite a dangerous individual because the drug I was taking at that time would do that to you. You know, so I was full of anger, and I was full of anger and arrogance and resentments and all kinds of horrible things that I have no control over. I couldn't control my emotions at all. I was like I was on a short fuse all the time. You know, there was a lot of circumstances that I'm not very proud of. You know, violence, crazy things that I would do to get the drugs that I needed, to the exclusion of anybody else. I would steal food out of my children's mouths to get my drugs. You know, and that's where I was at. That's where I was. You know, and I've shared this a lot because it was a real pivotal moment in my life, I think. You know, I remember that day they got me out. They took me out of the hospital wing and put me in the sort of, you know, in the general population, as it were. And they sat me in a chair, and I was in the kind of mist. I was coming out of this strange place. You know, I could barely talk, actually. But what I remember most about that day was that people would walk up to me, and I could see them coming at me, and it was like, you know, I didn't have the strength to get out of the fucking chair, let alone do anything else. I couldn't, you know, run away or anything. And they would either tap me on the shoulder or lean over and give me a little hug. And they would come out with things like, you know, we're glad you're here. Welcome. You know, we love you. Hang in there. And all those little one-liners that we hear so often in our rings. And it just touched a part. It touched something inside of me that, you know, today, even now, you know, it brings up a huge amount of emotion for me. It brings up a huge amount of gratitude because no one had ever said anything like that to me. Not really, you know, or certainly, you know, no one had ever said anything like that to me that made any sense to me. I didn't believe it, you know, because I was, like a lot of us, you know, I didn't believe I deserved anything good in my life because I destroyed so much in my life. And I knew that I'd done it, even though I denied it of myself. I couldn't accept the fact that I'd done those terrible things. But somewhere deep inside, you know, the little spark of humanity that was maybe left, I did know. And I was full of guilt and full of shame. And, you know, the only way I could deal with it was blaming everybody else. It was all your fault. It wasn't, and it couldn't be anything that I'd ever done that had forced me to do those things. You know, it must have been you. And those early days in that place changed my fucking life forever. You know, not only did it save my life, because it really did physically, it gave me the opportunity to be exposed for the first time to the love of this fellowship. And I carry that with me today. Even I carry that feeling with me today, because it's what's got me here. You know, so I could kind of ramble on about my using. I could tell you stories that make you laugh and weep and all that good shit. But I'm not, you know, I don't want to do that. You know, because most of it is, you know, it's just kind of blowing it up. You know, and I looked at that thing earlier on today and sort of grandiosity. I'm good at that. You know, I can make a pile of shit look like a fucking bowl of roses. You know, I can convince you that, I did convince you that you should give me your wallet and that you should be grateful for the fact that you've done it. You know, all that kind of bullshit, the manipulation and control that we exercise as using addicts is staggering, really. It amazes me how we ever got away with any of it, but we did somehow. You know, and I think it was about 3 weeks in, they stuck us in a short bus And what was really truly amazing about these people in this fucking place, really, and it's only really looking back on it that I've kind of come to understand what it really means, that nobody in that place had more than 6 weeks clean. That was it, you know, apart from maybe the people that were running it. They had a bit of recovery behind them, but I mean, it wasn't kind of you know what I mean? It was kind of assumed, but not something that was ever spoken about. You know, so I'm in a room full of fucking newcomers that basically loved me to life, you know. Confronted my bullshit, helped me wade through decades of denial and years and years and years and years of self-abuse and abuse of others. So yeah, they took me to this meeting, and it was profound. My experience in that place was profound. And they took me to this first NA meeting, and that really absolutely and utterly kind of cemented, I guess for me, that kind of cemented in me everything I was beginning to learn. And I kind of, don't get me wrong, you know, I mean, I was still confused. I still didn't really have a fucking clue what NA was, or, you know, I'd begun to get a bit of an understanding of what they were asking me to do in the steps, you know, which was all pretty obvious to me at the time. You know, was I powerless? Are you fucking kidding me? You know, was my life unmanageable? Are you joking? You know, was I mad? Yes. Did I need some fucking help? Absolutely. You know, those things were just blindingly obvious to me. I was 37 years old, you know, I mean, and yeah, I could see that. It was all as plain as day, you know, and I was very good at intellectualizing it, and kind of, I could talk the talk. But what happened in that meeting, I think, for me, was the beginning of that, and I've shared about this recently, was the beginning of that journey from understanding to acceptance, which for me is the journey between the head and the heart. And I used to hear about it, and people would talk about that, you know, that difference between, you know, reading a paragraph and understanding it on a kind of comprehensive level, but making that leap of actually making it make sense to understand it on a gut level, because I knew that that's what I needed to be doing. You know, I realized that early on, you know, I needed to understand this program at a gut level for it to be able to actually work in my life, because I could fucking talk my way out of anything. You know, I could stand there and tell you all the good stuff and what you wanted to hear, because that's what I was good at. That's what, as an addict, I was very good at. I could, you know, like I said, I could convince you of anything. But I was sat in that meeting, and I heard people talking about their lives. I heard people talking about my life. I heard people talking about my feelings. You know, I heard people talking about how Narcotics Anonymous had lit up their lives and given them some hope and freedom, that they didn't need to be trapped in that horrible place anymore, and there was a way out. You know, it reminds me of that old joke, isn't it? A guy jumps in the bottom of a hole, and three people walk along, and they all say, "Yeah, okay, we'll see if we can find someone to help you." And then the addict turns up, jumps in the hole with them, and the person at the bottom of the hole, "Oh my God, we're both stuck." He says, "No, I've got a ladder. I know the way out." And that's what I heard, that's what I saw. The solution was possible. But it was very contingent on me being willing and open-minded, honest and willing enough to apply that to my life, you know, to take on board what was being suggested, to engage fully in the process of recovery, as best I could. You know, and I think, like the rest of us, you know, very early recovery, I grabbed the soapbox and leapt on it, and I'm telling everybody that this is how it's going to work, you know, and you know, my journey in recovery, which is really what I want to talk about, has been an interesting one. You know, I threw myself into service very early on. I became a bit of a pest, really. I'd be at every meeting I could possibly be at. I would always get there early. I would always be kind of Johnny Keane. What can I do? And even if it meant, making sure that the literature was laid out straight, or if they needed a fucking pint of milk, I'd be the guy that would run off and get it and come back all hot and sweaty, you know. I was just so keen to engage. I wanted to be part of this fellowship. I wanted you to accept me. Because I still had a lot of that going on with me, that I didn't deserve it. And there was a bit of desperation still in me. I guess there still is, if I'm truly honest. A little bit, that need to be accepted and that need to be loved. It's something that's really hard to let go of. Even though, over the years I've learned that that's kind of unconditional anyway, just because I've got the courage to walk in the room and say, hi, I'm an addict and my name is Steve, that's where it all starts. I got told off by the guy I was in this fucking place with at the time, because I ended up going back to this little recovery town on the west coast, on the south coast, in the south coast of England, and I got told off by the guy that was running. I was doing too many meetings, and I remember saying, fuck you, because what I saw and what I could see and what I could feel that this program had to offer me, I wanted as much of it as possible, because I'm an addict, right? I want it now, and I want more of it. And if one is too many, a thousand never enough. Why would I go to one meeting if I can go eight or nine? And I'll be honest, I didn't care what fucking fellowship it was. I'd go to any 12-step meeting I could grab my own, I could grab hold of, because I knew that this is where I needed to be. I knew that I was so desperate and so broken when I got here. I just needed to be completely enmeshed in whatever it was that you guys had to offer me to help me to get better, because I really was destroyed and broken. I've always had problems kind of relating to people right from being a child. I find it very difficult to form relationships. I found it very difficult to trust people. There's all kinds of reasons for that I'm not going to go into, but they're part of me, they're part of who Steve is, but they exist. I acknowledge them. I acknowledge those things today as being part of me. So even though I was kind of there and all over the fucking, I was all over, NA like a rash, I was still kind of not really engaging and not really kind of, in some way there was a bit of me that would hold me back. There's little bits of me that I was holding back, and I was still kind of definitely caught up in that kind of needing to present you with a face that I thought you might like. And that was definitely one of my defects when I got here, because I lived in this fantasy world all those years. I used, and I lost sight of what was real and what wasn't. So there was a lot of my journey has been about finding out who Steve is. When I got here, I really didn't know. I didn't know who I was, or even what I was, to be honest. I couldn't. I didn't felt like I belonged anywhere. I can't lie. A lot of my early recovery was about that. It was about kind of faking it to make it a lot of the time. I went home to where I lived before I got, which is my hometown, which was Taunton in the West Country. There was no NA there, but I mean, maybe this was a bit of arrogance, maybe it was a bit of something else, I don't know. But I mean, I was being told, oh, you shouldn't go back to where you used, and you shouldn't go back to your old relationships, and you shouldn't do this, and you shouldn't do that. And again, my reaction to that was, fuck you. Because the truth was, one of the things I realized in my early, in very early, in those first few weeks of my recovery was that, first few weeks and months, was really one of the things I'd spent my entire life doing was running away from the responsibilities that I'd created in my life, or that I'd found myself in my life. Like the responsibility to my kids, like my responsibility to my partners. So Taunton was where my family was. Taunton was where the people that I cared most about in my universe were, my children, or three of my children. And I knew there was a part of me inside of me that knew that I needed to face up to that. I needed to get real. I needed to be part of that process and engage with that. and start to make the process, even though I hadn't even got close to a step nine. I understood that part of the process of my recovery was going to be making amends to all these people, and I think I realized really early on that wasn't going to be a simple matter of saying I'm sorry, because I'd said that enough times. I must have said that a million times. I'm sorry, I won't do it again. Yeah, right. That never worked. So why would they believe me? And the only way that I could see that I was going to kind of allow those people in my life that I cared about to do that was by just being consistent. Just be there. Be their dad. Be my partner's, be my partner's husband. I mean, at that time, my relationship that I'm still in today, with the decree I say was on the table. I mean, that was the deal. My partner was still using at that point. It wasn't there really. It kind of disintegrated. That part of that had gone, But I kind of realised, I think. Something else that happened for me in early recovery as well, which was a real kind of moment, was realizing that actually, my initial kind of rationale, I guess, thinking about it, was stop sticking needles in your arms. That'd be good. Go home, have a few drinks, maybe have a few spliffs at the weekend, get your life back. Do it for them. But there was something that changed inside of me during that process of early recovery that made me realize that actually that wasn't it. I needed to do it for me, and that I couldn't allow those things outside of myself to have an influence on that. So if that didn't work out, that didn't mean I was going to go out and use. If my kids rejected me, it didn't mean that I was going to go out and use. If my partner and I didn't manage to do anything with our relationship, that wasn't going to give me an excuse to go out and use, because I wasn't recovering for them. I was recovering for me. So I'm incredibly grateful for those little moments, and I guess in a way, maybe that's because I had my fucking ears open. I don't know. And a lot of it was going in, even though I didn't necessarily understand what was going in. It was all going in anyway, but I was open-minded enough to allow it to stay in there rather than just spew it all out the other end. And over time, that's proved itself to be true. I mean, higher power, oh my God. I have a higher power in my life today. I've always had a higher power in my life. I just didn't know it. But that interceded, that power interceded in my life. My partner saw what I had, wanted a bit of it, went home, decided to go out and get a bit of what I'd got. Went down a similar route, didn't last long in that situation, but came home. And in that process, I'd lost this place I was living, even though I'd moved into the family home while she was away. And I'm back there, and she came home early, and the rest is kind of history. 28 years later, she sat in the lounge next door to me watching the TV. That's a fucking miracle. And somehow or another, we've survived that and come through it. And that's because of this program. Everything I have and everything I own in my life today is thanks to this program. Thanks to you guys, and thanks to this amazing program that shows us and gives us the tools to allow ourselves to be ourselves, to allow ourselves to be ourselves, to understand who we are, begin to understand that who we are, to practice that, to regain all the things that we lost, the integrity and the sense of rightness that I didn't have when I first got here. So I've kind of thrown myself, I continue to throw myself into service. I mean, we started meetings. 1993, by then there was no NA where I was, so if you wanted meetings, you had to start them, and that's what we did. We started a little meeting there, met up, people started coming. It's amazing that build it and they will come. It's always amazed me that addicts will find a way to find the things they need to get through the shit that they find themselves in if they've got the willingness to engage, and they do, and that's a beautiful thing. We don't have to do much. We just have to be there. Hold the doors open, make sure the welcome is warm as the coffee pot, and addicts will get well. That's a remarkable thing about this program. We don't have to advertise it or stick on. I don't believe we'd have to stick it on billboards or any of that, because people's higher powers will find a way of bringing them to where they need to be. You know, but those meetings kind of grew. You know, there's now quite another. I think there's three meetings in that town today, 26 years or 27 years later. You know, kind of going back to that whole thing. You know, engaging with people, not being out of finding it difficult to trust. That's followed me around all my life. I don't make friends easily, even today. You know, I don't. I have a shitload of friends on Facebook. You know, I mean, there's probably only maybe a dozen of them that I love deeply and would be very upset if I lost them. You know, I'm kind of hurt and saddened by when any addict goes away and dies or goes out and uses. But there's a few, you know, few people in my life that I've learned that, you know, that it's okay, you know, and that's part of my process. You know, I'm an ongoing project. Steve is an ongoing project today. And I do get better at it. But I've always had this compassion. I think right from the very early part of my recovery, the compassion I experienced in that armchair, I've carried with me. I've tried my absolute best to give away, you know, to give back, because that's the bit that saved my life. That's the bit that enabled me to keep, that gave me the kind of hope to keep coming back, you know, that compassion, that empathy, that unequivocal, unfettered love that exists in these rooms is what kept me coming back. And it's not mine. You know, I share a lot about the fact that my recovery isn't mine. It belongs to you. It belongs to this fellowship. You know, I've done the work and I've got the days and I'm proud of that. 10,231 or however many fucking days it is now. But I mean, it's all one day at a time. You know, it's all one battle at a time. It's all one, you know, up and down of the fucking roller coaster at a time. You know, because recovery is not a straight line. You know, recovery is definitely not a straight line. Staying clean is pretty straight line. Don't use. That's it. Don't use. You know, that's the bottom line. Don't use. Being clean and being recovery are two different things, in my understanding. So now, there's been times in my recovery where I've been clean but not in recovery. There's been times I've been clean and fucking completely mad, you know, lost it, took back the control, you know, let go of my that heart understanding of what step one is and step two is and step three is and why it's important to, you know, acknowledge my part in things and accept the fact that I can be an asshole. So I just wake up one day and I'm an asshole again. It's like, oh God, okay, got to start all over again. And it feels like that sometimes, but it's okay. You know, the thing in the basic text, I think it talks about the fact that our higher power allows us to be human. You know, and if I'm nothing else today in 2020, I'm a human being. You know, and we go through recovery, we make some crazy choices sometimes, you know, we make choices based on what we think might be okay for us, and, you know, we have a go, and it either works out or it doesn't. Sometimes we rail against that, sometimes we can accept it, and that's me, you know. Some days I'm willing to completely accept the fact that I've tripped over a banana skin and fall on my ass, and other days I'm not. Other days you're like, fuck, you know, why isn't that working? Ah! You know, and I get really angry and arrogant. Just all. But again, that's only because I'm a human being. You know, and I've worked the steps. I've worked really hard at the steps over the years, in my way. You know, I was looking at this folder. It was reams and 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 pages and pages and pages and pages of writing about me, about where I am, about who I was. You know, and I've probably got other books and journals lying about in my house that I won't throw away that are also little snippets of Steve and me working my steps and me working with my sponsors. You know, me applying the program to my life as best I can, and sometimes it's just writing, sometimes it's poetry, sometimes it's works of art, sometimes it doesn't matter, as long as I'm kind of, I think for me, you know, because this program lives in my heart and it's there, there's never a moment in my life when I'm not thinking about it. There's never a day goes by when I don't consciously make myself aware of the fact that I'm in recovery and that what is going on right now, which bit of this program do I need to use to help me get through it, or which bit of this program do I need to honor and revere it and be grateful for it? How do I find a way to do that? You know, and that's what the steps give me. You know, they give me that ability. You know, it's been a long time since I formally sat down and wrote a set of steps out, a few years. But that's me. That's the way I work my program, and it's working, and it's working in my life. You know, and some of those choices. I mean, those that know me well know I went and fucked off to the Isle of Hebrides for 14 years. That was a good choice. You know? Did the homework there. Everything else, yeah, we had this list, and the one thing I hadn't put on the list is meetings. And it's like, okay, so there were no fucking meetings. And I found myself back where I was in Taunton in 1993, and it was like, what do we do? You know, it's okay. So, you know, once I'd realised I couldn't work the program on my own for a few years, which I tried that didn't work well. It was like, okay, set up a meeting, and it wasn't about setting up a meeting necessary for other people. You know, the same as it was all those years ago. It was about setting up a meeting for me. I needed to go to a fucking meeting. It didn't matter if there was anyone else there. As long as I was there, I was doing the right thing, you know, because I was in a meeting for an hour a week, or however long it was. I was reading the basic text. I was reading the literature. I was engaging with the process of being in recovery. I was, you know, even though there might not have been anyone to give it to, I was willing to give it away. And that process up there got me back from the brink of fucking relapse at 16 years clean. You know, I kind of re-engaged in service. Well, I really shouldn't get involved in some levels of service because it's not good for me. Well, then. But I do, and I find myself doing it, and I get sucked in, and I get kind of, you know, I find myself being spat out again, and that's okay too. You know, that's my stuff, their stuff, whoever's stuff it is. You know, I can go back to whatever step I need to go back to and have a look at it and say, okay, well, you know, I was a cunt there, wasn't I? Maybe I shouldn't have said that. Maybe I should have learned to keep my mouth shut, whatever, you know, all those things. That journey, it's all a journey, right? You know, not only is it ups and downs, it has smooth bits and rough bits. Sometimes it feels like walking over fucking broken glass. You know, but that's okay too, because on other days it feels like wading through a nice warm river, you know, whatever. All life is here. And like Jay said, and I always feel quite embarrassed by this in a way, and I don't know why. Maybe it's false humility, who the fuck knows. But out of all of that experience came these meetings. You know, four of us on various remote places around the UK decided that we'd had enough of one thing, and we ran off with our coffee pot and our resentment, and we started new meetings because the meetings we were going to weren't making any sense. You know, and kind of, I guess, the rest is history. I'm always blown away by it. You know, if I give myself a moment to think about it, I'll have a fucking tear in my eye thinking about it. The gratitude of seeing something that it was suggested to me I should do in those really early meetings. Of once you've got it, give it away. Come to some kind of fruition, you know, see other addicts finding us and finding what I found, you know, that love and that humility and that compassion that allows us to work through ourselves and come to an understanding and lose that desire to use and find a new way of life. It's amazing stuff. You know. So yeah, you know, and here we are, you know, this last year of my recovery has been a fucking nightmare. In all kinds of different ways. Not a nightmare, it's been interesting. In inverted commas. Air quotes interesting, you know. I've lost a lot. I've lost people in recovery. I've lost things. Other, you know, things have happened in recovery that have confronted my ability to to want to stay clean, and I've always managed to get through it with the help of you guys in the program, not picked up, you know, and this year's been very similar, you know, this last 12 months. That's another reason why I think we share clean time. It's kind of, you know, because it's a gift, you give it, you get, we get, we, I received it, and it's my job to look after it, you know, and maybe every now and again, we got to jump into a room and give a bit of a progress report. Am I looking after your gift? Am I giving it the respect that it deserves? Am I caring for it and loving for it and cherishing it and making sure it's in good condition to hang on to somebody else? You know, I think, you know, as long as I've stayed clean through that period, it's yes is the answer, you know, because there's a way that we can get through anything together that we can't get through on our own. That's what I've come to believe. You know, we lost the last of our old dogs last December. Whatever, you know, I lost my mother-in-law this year. She was a wonderful old lady. She was the only person in our family that ever religiously would send. I missed it this year. I did miss her this year, but she was the only person in the family that would send me a card every time, every 19th of October. She would send me a card. Congratulations on your clean time. Well done. Nothing else much more than that, but that was enough, you know. And I kind of went through a bit of a process with her summer of last year, where I was given the opportunity to finally do some real amends with her and talk. Whilst my partner was away, I kind of looked after her for a couple of 3 months, and we went on trips and stuff. It was great. It was fantastic. She died in December. And then we've, you know, here we all are, fucking locked down. Wow. That's blown my head right up. I've been through a lot of stuff this year on the strength of that. This year, you know, all kinds of crazy shit going on in my head on the strength of that, you know, not least of which was kind of arrogance. You're not doing it right. You know, all that good shit, you know. Wanting to control everything and realizing that I can, and then figuring that out, and, you know, coming out the other side of it, and just being blown away and humbled again by what I see the power of this fellowship to do. I'm constantly blown away by that this year. I'm just utterly fucking amazed, you know, and it really, really works. And I'm a bit like Jay mentioned it, this whole kind of global thing that's going on in our world right now that we've always been aware of in these meetings, but the rest of the fellowship is beginning to wake up to. But I mean, I was actually in a meeting in Montana last week, and there's a guy in that meeting who says, could I have your phone number? And I've gone, yeah, sure, why not? And I don't do that all the time. I really don't, but this, yeah, okay, there's my phone number. And he phoned me up. So he's a guy from somewhere else in the States, not from Montana, that just happens to be in these meetings. You know, that between us in Higna, we actually helped that particular region, gave them some ESH that enabled them to set up a few meetings online before the pandemic. So, yeah, I like going back there. It's a sense of connection. And it's a nice little meeting. So this guy says, can I have your phone number? I said, yeah, okay, no worries. So he's from somewhere else in America, Pennsylvania or something, I forget. And he phoned me up. He sent me a message. Can I call you? I said, yeah, no worries. So he's 102 days clean, which means he's got clean online. He's never been to a face-to-face meeting in his life. He's in the US military, and he's stationed in Germany, and his sponsor had given him a fucking assignment to phone three men with over 10 years clean. And he phoned me up, and we had a great conversation for about an hour. You know, that couldn't happen if we were all sat in little church halls, locked down, shut off from the global, shut off from the world. You know, and I'm incredibly grateful for that. I have friends all over the world. You know, and I love them. And I miss them. You know, one died this week, and that's going to hurt. You know, but that's life. You know, that's what this program prepares us for. It prepares us to live through this stuff. It shows us that we can feel. I have my feelings back today. You know, it shows us it's okay to feel those things. It's okay, it's all right to feel sad. It's all right to feel you know, joy. It's all right to feel anything that we're anything that we can feel it. Well, it's allowed, you know. We can have feelings today, but we don't have to use on them. You know, that's what this program's given to me. And thank you for letting me share. If you're new in this fellowship and you're in this meeting today, please keep coming back. Never give up, ever. You know, because we're always here. NA loved me to life, and NA has got the power to love any of us back to life, no matter who we are, where we are, what we did, where we come from. So thank you for letting me share, and I hope someone's got something out of all of that, and it makes any kind of sense at all, and it encourages them to keep coming back. So thank you for letting me share, guys.